Okay, tonight's topic, Be'ez Hashem, is Isurei Hana. Next week, the plan is to go back to the Shabbos week. For next week, so that should be Pesik Reisha. But tonight, as far as Isurei Hana, you may notice the packet is a little bit larger than usual. And at the same time, we'll probably have kind of less correlation to what we're talking about. But basically, the topic is a huge topic, which we could speak about for quite a long time, which I'm going to try not to do as much. I'm going to try to be a little more focused and just kind of give a broad overview of some of the relevant issues. And to that end, you will have in this packet a lot of things that we won't get to, including a number of long tshuvas on the topic. And even the long tshuvas that you have here are edited. I tried to cut out the stuff that wasn't really relevant and still cram it into one packet. So you see this Chassan Sofer, then we'll make reference to a little bit. There's an Avnei Nezer here, there's another Yehuda. There's a Meshach Dover. A lot of these are important discussions of various aspects of this topic. I am not promising that we will get to them all tonight, but then the point is you have them here to look at on your own when you get a chance. And we'll cover as much as we can cover in a relatively brief period of time. Now, in general, so the issue of Isurei Hana, to begin with, one thing we want to figure out is what exactly is the shear for an Isur Hana. Just to make a quick reference to that. So we know in general the Torah has a number of prohibitions, really a rather extensive list. There are a number of prohibitions which the Torah asks not only in terms of eating or in terms of some other localized activity, but prohibits being nene from them at all. So the fact that this prohibition is more broad than an issur like achila, for example, doesn't necessarily mean that it's completely separate from achila. You're probably familiar with the Rambam's famous Nekuda Nefla, where the Rambam states in his Perish HaMishnayis, Mesachas Krisis, against Tosfos there in Daf Yud Gimel. For those of you who are in Daf Yomi, this was less than 2 weeks ago, that a nevela is not subject to basu b'chalav, the Isser Basu B'Chalav, because of Ein Isser Chalal Isser. You can't have a new Isser Basu B'Chalav come and take place on top of the Isser Nevela, even though you might think that you should be able to, because Basu B'Chalav is Asr B'Hana. So therefore, it's a more expansive Isser than Nevela, which is only Asr B'Achila. Nevela is not Asr B'Hana. You're allowed to feed it to the dog. You're allowed to sell it. You know, whether you should be involved in selling a Nevela all the time, whether that's a job for a nice Jewish boy, is questionable. We do have a concept of probably Nisad Rabbanan of Shechar B'Dvar Masurim, but on a regular basis, there's no Isser to be Nene from a Nevela. So therefore, one might think that the Isser Basu B'Chalav should be Chal on the Isser Nevela. It's more expansive. So the Rambam says no, that even though Basu B'Chalav is an Isser Hana, and Nevela is only an Isser Achila, still it's really the Isser Achila that's controlling. This calls us a nekud in the flaw. It's an unbelievable point that the Isser Hana stems from the Isser Achila. So basically, first Basu B'Chalav is primarily Isser Achila, and then coming out of it, there's also an Isser Hana. But when we talk about Ein Isser Chal Isser, we're looking at it as an Isser Achila. So therefore, there is a strong overlap between the core of Isser Achila and Isser Hana. And that may impact the question of what exactly is the shear. Do we define it by a kedayis, like we define Isurei Achila, which is the position of a number of achronim? Or do we view it separate from Achila, like perhaps the opinion of Tshuva Subiki Ve'eger, that we see it as just a pure Hana issue, which Hana issue may be defined in monetary terms. And therefore, probably a Hana that's worth a pruta, whatever that is, that would be the shear for the Isur Hana. Nonetheless, whatever the shear is, it may be that chatzi shear of this is also anyway. That's the statement Yerushalmi has. We discussed chatzi shear by eating a few weeks ago. We discussed there that Rish Lakish was of the opinion that chatzi shear is mutter min ha-Torah and it's only also midrabanan. But there is a statement in Yerushalmi that Moder Reb Shimon, that he would agree in the case of the Isurei Hana that there's an Isur even less than this year. So that's a big discussion. Is that just the position of Yerushalmi? Is that true at all? So these are a couple of points that are subject to discussion. What exactly is the shear of an Isur Hana? And whatever that shear is there still an Isur with less than this year? All of that is something that's that's discussed. But perhaps the biggest topic within Isur Hana, and one that I really just want to give a brief overview of tonight, because it really is a very, very involved topic and the subject of many lengthy essays by many Achronim, even beyond what's included in the packet, is the question of ownership of Isurei Hana. If something is cut off from all types of benefit, so what does that say about your ability to possess it, to have any monetary rights over it at all? And are there perhaps distinctions to be made along the way? Again, this is a very involved topic. A lot of Rishonim get involved one way or another. Some Rishonim get involved explicitly. Some Rishonim get involved less explicitly. A lot of Achronim being mefalpel about what different Rishonim mean. And again, we're not going to really have the opportunity to go through every Raya inside outside carefully and go through every point that the Achronim bring. I like to just give a type of broad structure. And again, some of the discussions are reproduced for you here in the packet. So on the one hand, there were a number of Rishonim that seemed to believe straight out that there really are no monetary limitations that come out of Yisurei Hana. And despite the fact that one's not permitted to benefit from these items, nonetheless, that doesn't affect one's ability to be called the Bailam over it, or to acquire it when it's in that state, or to acquire it or to sell it. So that seems to be the position of many. Many bring a raya from the Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Daf Mem Beis and Mem Aleph that states that the Avodah Zarah that belongs to a Nachri, so when a Jew picks it up and acquires it, it becomes an Avodah Zarah of Yisrael, which has different dinim as far as whether it's possible to mevakel it or not. But the presumption of the Gemara seems to be that despite the fact that Avodah Zarah is also Bahana, it doesn't prevent the Jew who's picking it up from acquiring it, from achieving title over this item. It seems to give you the impression that it's possible both to own Isurei Hana and to become an owner. One could have distinguished, and we'll discuss a little bit later, one could have said that Isurei Hana maintain the status of belonging to whoever they belong to, but it's not possible to transfer. This Gemara seems to sound like both, that you can acquire it and it becomes yours. This is a raya number of Rishonim brings, Rivash brings this in his Shuvas, where he expresses a position that's similar to one the Rambam has in Hilchas Chametz Matzah. In our discussions about Tashbisu, we've discussed this Rambam, it's a famous statement in the Rambam. The Rambam says that normally one doesn't get Malkus for violating the Yisr Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzah. That's because generally Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzah is a lav shein bo maisa. That normally if I just own Chametz and I continue to own it over Pesach, so I'm not doing any maisa for me to get Malkus on. How would I possibly have a scenario in which I could get Malkus where there is a maisa? So the Rambam says, if I'm going to make it on Pesach, or if I'm going to buy the chametz on Pesach, so then I'll be eligible for malchus. So how is it possible to buy chametz on Pesach if chametz on Pesach is aser bahana? So then one might make the case that it shouldn't be possible to buy it. So this is something that a number of Rishonim discuss, and the Rashba has a shuvah about this as well. And again, as you mentioned, the Rivash, that perhaps this is the case because it is possible to acquire and to own Yisurei Hana, and that's something that we see by Chametz, and that indeed appears to be the case. And maybe we'll come to a little bit later, some suggest that Chametz may be in its own category, and the Yehuda has a very lengthy truth about that, much of which is reproduced in this packet as well, that the Gemara does say, Emsachim and Avav, that Chametz is something that, like a bor b'rishus a rabin, is one of two things that Eino b'rishuso shel adam v'asan ha'kasev ki'ilu heim b'rishuso. It's not within your rishus. And yet the Torah created a situation where it's shayach to you anyway. So one might make the case that chametz is different. And again, a number of Rachamim do argue this point, and that may indeed be the case. Another major area which is affected by this question, in general, so we have to figure out how does something being asur bahana affect the performance of mitzvahs. If you want to perform a mitzvah with something that's asur bahana, so strictly speaking, first of all, right off the bat, we do have a concept called mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. And it's worth knowing that it's also a machlokas rishonim how exactly I apply that principle. That there seems to be two ways to understand what that idea means. On the one hand, it could mean that the fulfillment of a mitzvah is not a hana. God didn't give us mitzvahs for our hana. And the fact that we're performing a mitzvah, that is not in and of itself a hana. So if I'm doing a mitzvah, that is not per se a violation of the Isur Hana. The fact that I'm fulfilling a mitzvah with this object doesn't put me in violation of the Isur Hana. However, if there is some other benefit that's coming to me at the same time, if let's say it's a mitzvah of eating, or as the Gemara gives this scenario, let's say it's a tefillah b'mikvah when it's very hot outside, if there's some type of physical benefit that's coming to me, so then it's not so pashut. It could be that maybe the mitzvah itself is not called hana, but the fact that I'm physically benefiting from the experience is called hana, and it might still be also for me to perform the mitzvah in this fashion. So that's a question of Rishonim, because there are other Rishonim who understand mitzvahs lav lehanes nitnu in kind of more of like an essay dochalosis type of way, that basically through the fulfillment of the mitzvah you're not going to violate the Isur Hana. And again, the first way was much more focused, it's just that the mitzvah itself is not called Hana, so if that's all that's there, then you're not violating the Isur Hana, but the physical component maybe. But others say differently, others say that the entire mitzvah itself is kind of permitted because of a similar to Efe Dochalose kind of point, in which case that might allow for a broader range of mitzvahs to be fulfilled with Isur Hana. But there is another issue that may be relevant, and that's the fact that certain mitzvahs, and this is a concept perhaps most famously associated with the Lulav and Esrog, but it's true about other mitzvahs as well, other mitzvahs seem to require some type of bialis, some type of ownership on the mitzvah, whether we call it shalom, lachem, whatever it is in a given context. There are many mitzvahs which require some type of identification of the performer of the mitzvah with the object. And is that possible when dealing with Isur Hana? So that's again a question in Rishonim. And there are those who feel that it's not possible, that if something is also b'hana, so then you cannot call it shalom, you can't call it lachem, those mitzvahs that need that are not going to work. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who disagreed. The Ritva in Maseches Sukkah and Daf Lamed Hayim Aleph has a long discussion where he's talking about an Esrog Shel Orla, and he brings a large number of different issues that may get in the way. But as far as Lachem, if you read between the lines of what he's saying, it comes out that the Lachem is Pashtus, not an issue. So it sounds like from that Ritva that it is possible to have ownership over an Esrog Hana, that it can be Shayach to you. There may be other issues as far as fulfilling a mitzvah, but lachem isn't one of them. As we'll discuss later, there's a ritva in the Darim and Daf Pehe, which sounds a little bit differently, because the ritva says that if somebody asers himself, a certain object on himself, he asers it b'hana, so then it sounds like it's not his. That's the way the ritva sounds in the Darim and Daf Pehe. But nonetheless, Achronim explained there that might be something different, that there, when you're creating the Isra, you decide to asser something on yourself, so that may be viewed as a certain type of hefker. The fact that you're saying you have no interest in having any benefit from a certain object, that may be akin to declaring you give up all rights to it. So that might be the reason. It might be that it's not that automatically you have no monetary rights to something that's also b'hana, but if you yourself are declaring you don't want to have hana from it, then that is in itself an act of hefker. So that's another possibility. There's also a question how to interpret the Ran. The Ran in the Avodah Zarah on this Gemara about picking up an Avodah Zarah seems to imply that there's no Zechiyah by Avodah Zarah. And on the other hand, when it comes to Lulav Shel Asher, it sounds like it's possible for it to be Lachem. So it sounds like it's a Stira, that it can be lachem, but that you cannot acquire Isuri Hana. So again, like we alluded to earlier, some Achronim, for example, Sternbuch, suggest that maybe what the Ran is saying is that there's a chiluk, that as far as it being considered the property of whoever owns it, that is possible. It's possible for Isuri Hana to have the name of the owner on it. But as far as actually performing a transaction with an Isuri Hana, and to actually make a kinyan on one that you don't have already, that might be difficult. So how does it work, that Gemara in Avodah Zarah, about picking up the Avodah Zarah of a guy? He said, because since it's possible for the Avodah Zarah himself to be mevatel it, that's where the window comes in for the Jew to acquire it, implying that were that not the case, if it was a straight Isur Hana, that it wouldn't be possible to acquire it. So that's how some Achronim suggest that maybe Kinyanim you can't do, but ownership title, maybe that still exists. The Chuvas Kol Aryeh suggests that he thinks this whole machlokus about whether or not there is bialis or there isn't bialis is dependent on a machlokus that's very well known from the Maseches Bava Basra, the question of Kinyan HaPeirus or Kinyan HaGuftami. that if somebody has the right to use something, the right to benefit from, so to speak, the payers from the products of something, so is that akin to having some ownership in the item itself? So that's a machlok, the Gemara, do we say, kinyan ha-payers, kinyan ha-guf dami, or it's not kinyan ha-guf dami? And the Kalari writes, so you see that that's basically the whole issue there, that do we say that a right to use something is basically the same as owning it in and of itself? In which case, when you have if you have an Isser Hana, which we're not permitted to use, so maybe the fact that we're not permitted to use it at all nullifies the aspect of ownership. Or do we say, Kinyan HaPeiris Lalki Kinyan HaGuf Dami, that ownership and usage are two separate things, and therefore it might be theoretically possible to have something which you cannot use, but nonetheless is still something you can own. This may be a machlokis in the later Lamed Shacharonim. There's a very nice sefer that came out recently called the Chavetzelos HaSharon Al Torah. And in that sefer he quotes the machlokis between Reb Shimon Shkap and Reb Chaim Brisker, as far as what exactly is the hesber of the idea that Isur Hana may not have ownership. And he quotes that according to Reb Shimon Shkap, it has to do with the fact that value is determined by utility. And if something has close to no utility, then it may, for all intents and purposes, have no value and have no monetary existence. While Reb Chaim understood it differently, in that it was just an aspect of the quality of being Asur B'Hana, means it's nullified as far as Mammon is concerned. If something is Asur B'Hana, by definition, it doesn't have any monetary existence, and it's not really a function of the utility. So that's really similar a little bit to these two sides in the Kalariyeh is saying. These are some of the svaras that are suggested. The Ketzot HaChoshen has a famous comment, in Simin Tav Vav Gimel, where he suggests a split, that maybe it's possible to say that you have ownership, you are considered to be Bailim over Isser Hana, but nonetheless it's considered to be Eino Berushusa. This is an expression that's made famous by the Gemara. The Gemara has a statement that Gazal Vol Nishayishu HaBailim, that if you have somebody who stole something, but the original owner hasn't yet given up the rights to it, hasn't given up the hope of getting it back, so that last step of transferring the property hasn't happened yet. So the Gemara says, Shnei Hemeinim Michol Mahakdish, neither of them are able to give it over to the Beis HaMikdash. Zeb Lefi Fe'ena Shalal, Zeb Lefi Shena Bershuso. The guy who stole it can't be Mahakdish because he doesn't own it. He can't be Mahakdish something you don't own. And the guy who had it stolen from him, he also can't be Mahakdish because it's not within his property right now. It's not within his physical property, so to speak. So therefore, it's not something he has that type of control over. So that gives us the impression like there might be two different stages. There's ownership and there's still ownership with control, the idea of Eino Bershuso. So that's what the Tzos tries to suggest, that maybe there is a split, that you can own something and it can be called yours, but still it's not Bershuso. This position has also been identified with the Tshuvas Chasam Sofer, which you have here, again in somewhat edited form, in Simon Kuf Hei. But if you read the whole thing, it's not so posh, it's exactly what he says. Now, when you get to the end, it seems like he's basically saying that there really is ownership in Isur Hana, both as far as being yours and being Bershus. So if he goes back and forth with a couple of possibilities, he's motivated by Tosus and Chulin. Tosus and Chulin, Daf Kuf Mem Aleph, Kuf Mem Amar Aleph, which he starts off with, has the possibility that if you have a behema of Ir HaNidachas, which is Asur B'Hana, that even though one shouldn't be Makdashit, if one is Makdashit, maybe the carbon is kosher. So how could the carbon be kosher if it's not something you can own, if it's not, don't we assume we have to own your Kavanos? So that's something that the Chasam Sofer discusses in the Shuvas. You see his conclusion is a little bit less clear. Not so clear that he really necessarily is saying the same thing as the Tzos. One thing he does mention is he thinks it's possible to say there's a difference between the ownership necessary for a korban and the ownership necessary for, let's say, lulav and esrog, the din of lachem. So that might mean that it has to really be called yours. While when we say you have to makdish your own thing for a korban, that really means it has to not be someone else's. So it could be that something might work for korban and not work for lulav and esrog, at least in theory, because it may not be called yours, but it may not be called somebody else's either. The fact that you may not have control over it doesn't necessarily mean that it goes to somebody else. So that's Chiluk he mentions. Again, you have the liberty to look at this on your own. It's a question, though, in general, beyond this question of Hektish, how many differences would it make? Rav Scheinberg in his Sefer in the Tzabas HaChoshen is a commentary on the Ktzos, so he has an arichus of trying to come up with different afterminas for what the Ktzos could mean. Maram Shikim writes in one place in his Chuvis, in Arachayim and Tzman Reishud, that he's not so convinced of such a difference, and that he's not so convinced the two words mean different things, that sometimes the words are used interchangeably, and he's not really sold on the distinction. The Reuven Katz in the Chuvis Dagol Reuven has also the Chuvis about this in Simon Dalid, where he puts in his own explanation of what exactly is the difference between Shelo and Bershusso. The Rashba in Masechet Shavuos in Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Bey is about this concept of Shelo and Bershusso. So the Rashba writes, that when the Gemara says it's about Hektish, so one shouldn't necessarily assume that that means that you can't ever transfer property that's in the state. You shouldn't assume that this is something that's all that affects all kinyanim. So that was a special gzeres hakasev by kachim. But it could be that for other types of kinyanim, it might still be possible to transfer. The kachig lavarav in his chuvis and the chuvis ayritzvi in chelik aleph and simin pei gimel, he says he doesn't think that most poskim really agree with this lahalacha. But that's also an element that would be relevant. And this is also discussed in a tshuva the Avnei Nezer has, the Rebbe of the Kachig Lover of, in Arachayim and Simin Shemamad Aleph. And that, again, is one of the discussions that is reproduced here in the packet. And you see there also he's not so excited about the whole Shalom v'Sheni B'Shusso distinctions. There is also a question how to figure out a statement the Ran has in the name of the Rashba. The Gemara says in the Dharma, made reference to earlier, the Gemara says in the Dharma, that Peheim and Aleph. Let's say if somebody says that somebody takes a neder that he doesn't want his Kohanim and Levim to get Hanah from him. So what about his Trumas and Maestras, which belong to them anyway? So any Kohen can come and take the Truma on his own. In other words, it's not up to him to decide who to give it to. He doesn't have what's known as the Tovas Hanah. So the Ran quotes from the Rashba, that here we see then a yesod, that if somebody asks his own property on himself, that other people can now come and take it, and he can't stop them from taking it. It's like he can't stop the different Kohanim from taking the Truma. So, apparently implying that the Isser Hana cuts off your monetary ownership, and you don't have the right to stop anybody from taking it. So, the Machan Ephraim has a whole essay about this, where he doesn't really understand where this is coming from. And he asks the Kasha based on the Ran himself, that the Gemara says earlier in the Dharm, on the Mzayin Amad Aleph, that if somebody asers his property, he asers his stuff against his son. His son can't get any Hana from his stuff. And then this guy dies, so now the property becomes, in theory, the property of the son. So the son doesn't actually take hold of it, which doesn't mean that he can't get anything from it, says the Gemara, but rather he can give it to his other relatives. And so that's what the Ran comments on it. The idea that the Gemara says the son doesn't inherit it, the Ran says it doesn't mean he doesn't inherit it at all, it means that he doesn't use it himself, but he still has the right to give it to all of his siblings and his friends and let them take it. So that's what it sounds like. It's apparently, according to the Ran, not called Hana. So why is that any different than this case? So if a guy asks his property on himself, so why is the assumption that he loses control over it? So Nachman Ephraim suggests that maybe the chiluk is whether he's the one asking it or whether somebody else asked it. That in the case of the Yorish, the father asked it, so that's one situation. But if you ask it yourself, so again, that's the type of hefker. So then that's as if you're saying that nobody else can be stopped from taking it because you give up all your rights. But if you're the son of the person who asked it, so then it's also b'hanah from you to benefit from it, but it doesn't have the same hefker status. But again, whether or not that's as Akiva is asking, so the fact that you have the ability to, the question of having the ability to stop other people from taking it and to decide who takes it or not, is that called hanah or not? So that's a question. The Nesivus HaMishpat has a discussion where he's masik on the Machne Ephraim, and he thinks that the ability to decide who gets it and who gets what is very much a hana, and this is gets into a little bit more of an involved discussion. Okay. So again, and we also mentioned already that this idea that Hefker might be what's going on is also a possibility. And that's also what it sounds like from Tosfos and Daf Yomi yesterday. Krisis Chav Dalet and Medalf. Tosfos also gives you that impression that Isuri Hanoa have a status of Hefker. Sorry? It is ability. He said that to say that that's not called Hana, to say that that's not the question in general of being able to decide who gets what and who doesn't. That's not called Hana. He says it's not true. It's very much called Hana, and he has a... Well, Machna Fayim was at one point suggesting that possibly in the Ran. So, if you take a look there, it's a little bit of a longer discussion, just trying to give a very very broad overview of it. Then, on the other hand, so far we've seen that some Rishonim say you do have bailus and you can make kinyanim. Other Rishonim may be interpreted as saying you have bailus but you can't make kinyanim. And there's also the position that you have bailus but it's not berishoso. And what does that affect? And on the other hand, you have Rishonim, like it sounds like from Rashi in a couple places, and that's also here in the packet, that it's just not yours, that you don't have any bailus over Yisrael Hana. That's how Rashi sounds in Subas and Daf Lamadal and Amadalif, where the Gemara talks about shechting something for Avodah Zarah, and the Gemara has an expression there, Lav Demari Katavach. Rashi says that at that moment, when you start shechting it, Lav Demari, who it's not yours, it's no, you no longer have ownership over it once you've started the process of turning it into an Avodah Zarah. And that's also how, what he sounds like in Psachim and Avav, in the context of Chametz. And the position of the Ravid as well, the Ritva quotes in Lamed Aleph from the Beis, that an Esrog Shal Arla is possible because of lacking of Lachem, which mentioned earlier with Shonim, we didn't say like that, but the Ravid is the opinion that this is not Lachem, again, apparently assuming that there is no status of Mominus in that case. Okay, so those are a couple of different possibilities. Do we say, is Bailus, no Bailus, partial Bailus, or what? Then within that, there are a number of different theories in Achronim to maybe suggest various chilukim. For example, some Achronim suggest, and the Sefer Neshuvas Yad Sofer quotes an opinion like this, and I also saw recently there by Warman in his Sefer in Sheris Yosef and Chelik Beis, wants to suggest this in the Rambam also, that maybe it depends what type of Isser Hanah it is. That we know from the Mishnayis and Temura that some types of Isseri Hanah have to be burnt, and some have to be buried. And the idea of being buried, basically, is that that's not really a mitzvah that you have to do to it. That's basically just keeping it out of the way of people. That if you have an Isser Hanah lying around, people are going to use it. But if it's buried, so it's not something that's in people's way. So these are different types of Isser Hanah. So some Achronim want to suggest that if there's a mitzvah like Sreifa, something you have to actually do, so then the fact that you have a mitzvah to accomplish with this, that's some type of source. So then there is some type of moment ownership that's involved because you have an involvement to the extent of fulfilling that mitzvah. But if it's something that you have nothing that you're obligated to do with it, and it's just a question of getting rid of it, so then, or keeping it out of the way, so then it's possible that those types of Yisuri Hana have no mominess at all. There's also a discussion in Chaim Kanievsky Sefer about Egla Ruf in the Sefer Nachal Eson, where he considers the question that maybe when you're talking about the an animal that may have been also b'hanah to be used as an egla arufa. So there he suggests the possibility that if it's possible to use it for a mitzvah, so that by definition may become something that has monetary value. That it could be that the only reason it wouldn't have monetary value is because there's nothing you can do with it. But if we're going to say that it's kosher for the mitzvah, so then by definition it would have monetary value and then that would work. So how exactly that would affect from the discussions is an intriguing thought. The Tshuva Shai in his Tshuvas suggests a very practical view that maybe we should look at based on what's actually going to happen. That Yisuri Hana, if a person is actually going to use it despite the fact that it's Aser, so then maybe it does have value. And if he's not going to use it because he's going to keep the din, so then maybe it doesn't have value. Maybe it's all practically determined based on what you're actually going to do and what you're not going to do. This is comparable to something we've mentioned in the past. I think in the Shuvas Myron Brisk, he mentions this, that a question was asked about Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzeh, that some Rishonim debate the question of whether Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzeh needs a shear or not. To be honest, it needs a shear kazayas, or is even less than a kazayas asr. So some Achronim ask, but if it's if it needs a shear, so how could it ever have a shear? Because we have a rule called Kitute Mechta Shire, which means if something is waiting to be destroyed, so then it's halachically viewed as if it doesn't have a shear. So if you have a kezayis of chametz in your house, but it's waiting to be destroyed because you have a mitzvah of tashbisu, so then why do we not say kitute mechta shire, and we therefore view it as if it's not a kezayis? So if you're going to tell me that bali ra bali matze needs to be a kezayis, then you're never going to have bali ra bali matze. So some suggest a similar svar to like this to what the Shura Shai is saying, that kitute mechta shire is not automatic, that it depends on whether or not you're actually going to destroy it. So if you are going to destroy it, so you're talking right, then it's as if it doesn't have a shear, and you're not a rabbi rabbi, you might say. And that's what the Gemara means when it says, Hamishal Manas Lavaro is mutter, that somebody has chametz that he plans on destroying it, so we don't assume he's in violation of Tashbisu. It's only somebody who's not going to destroy it, because then we'll say that the Ketute Mikta Shire doesn't apply, and the shear is there, and he's over by Rabbi Matzah. So too, Shira Shai is saying here that maybe it's all based on what's actually going to happen. So if you're actually not using it, because it's also Bahana, so then it has no value. But if you're using it despite the Issa, so then it has value because you do have monetary benefit from it. The Macheshes, in his Sefer, the first piece of the Macheshes, in Chelek Aleph and Siman Aleph, has a very lengthy piece about this. It's not reproduced here, but feel free to go to this medrash and go through that. Basically, this question of Yisur HaNah, does it have ownership or not? And there he suggests a distinction that we'll mention again in a few minutes, that it depends, that there are some type of Yisur HaNah that are mutter shelo kederach hanasan, and there are some that are also even shelo kederach hanasan. So he says maybe that's the factor, that if it's mutter shelo kederach hanasan, so then there's something you can do with it. So then there's some monetary value. But if there isn't, then that's something that has no value. And as you mentioned, sorry? That's also a possibility that some discuss. Sometimes they maybe once, which also goes back to the Nisraf and Nikbarin thing, right? So it could be, if something has to be Nikbarin, so then even the ashes have to be hidden away. But something has to be burnt, so once it's burnt, so then it's done, so then the ashes might be mutter, so that might make a difference. That's also something that some Achronim suggest. Sorry? Right, now because once it's not some Nisraf, then it becomes mutter. And again, chametz is something that some suggest might be treated differently, as we mentioned earlier. And again, look at the Nod of Yehuda about that. The Maharshag in his tshuvas, Maharshag was a Talmud of the Imam Shik, who in turn was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. So the Maharshag in his tshuvas suggests that maybe it's just a split between Lekula and Lechumra. That maybe Lekula, we assume that there is no Zechia, and you can't fulfill mitzvahs and things like that. But Lechumra, maybe we're Machmir. And in that case, it's kind of like an extension of the Asal Kasef Gilu Bershoso, that maybe as far as violating Yisurin, it's still possible to do, even though technically the ownership is not there. So you're not so excited about this? Right, that's also a possibility. That you say that if the Gemara is saying that by Chamei shows it's not true, but other things. But maybe just in a different sense, it means that, for example, you pick up of a Zara, so technically speaking, you can't acquire ownership of it. But the act of doing that is nonetheless, us or anyway in that way. Like, for example, maybe it's comparable to intermarriage, right? Technically speaking, it's not possible to marry a non-Jew, Kedushin or Tosin. Nonetheless, there's still an issur of intermarriage. It's an issur to act in the way that you're getting married, even though, halachically speaking, the marriage isn't anything. So maybe Kinyanim by Yisur HaNah work the same way, that it's not really possible for the Kinyan to work. But, nonetheless, the Yisurim that come out of it are still going to be prohibited. Yeah. Yes. In Chulin? Right. Well, that's not necessarily the case, because maybe it's possible to have ownership even if something doesn't have a shear. It may just be a question of whether or not something has monetary value. But you can have monetary value without having a shear. A shear could be something different. Yeah. I think they are working off a similar type as far as that. In theory, if you have a utility for it, so then to that extent. Right. Hi. Mm-hmm. because maybe it's possible to say that you have a scenario where, technically speaking, how could you violate the Isser intermarriage? Kedushin is entofes between a Jew and a non-Jew, so it's not really possible to intermarry. But nonetheless, yeah. But one could say, how is that possible? If there's no Kedushin anyway, so then you can't violate the Isser. So, you see, it's not that way. You see that to act like you're doing it, even though it's not possible to do it, is what the Isser is. So maybe there's a similar concept that's relevant here, that even though the Kinyan may be hampered on some structural level, but to act like you're doing it is nonetheless tripping over the Isser. There's also Yamshul Shlomo and Bavakama. You notice almost all the famous Yamshul Shlomos end up in Bavakama somehow. So Yamshul and Bavakama in Perek Tes, Simon Samach Aleph, where he suggests that if something is Asur Bahana because of a Knas, as opposed to having some type of inherent Isser Hana, so then that's not called Hefter, because then the Bialim have the right to give it to Tzedakah. This is discussed in Shuvas on the Giyantiv. If you want to take a look there, this is in Yeridayim and in Peites. It's another possibility that's out there. There's also a question, what's the story about Yisuri Hanav Drabbanan? That's also something we'll come back to in a second. Rav Engel in the Beis HaOtzer has a Chakira, which I'm not going to try to explain now what the Nafkamina is. You can look at it yourself to see. He has a very populish Nafkamina. But in his Beis HaOtzer, he has a short piece about this question of, under, you know, Beis HaOtzer is like an encyclopedia, so under Yisur Hana, has a very short piece about whether it has Bialim or not. But his whole piece is basically centered around the question, so do we say that you only, in theory, couldn't have Bialim over something else, but you yourself could have the Bialim? What I'm talking about is that there is an Inyan that a mace is Asur Bahana. So what about the person himself? Does he have ownership of himself? Or do we say, in other words, maybe we'll say that even if there's no ownership of Isser Hana, that's only when the Isser Hana is something else, so then you can't be shy after that to own it. But if the Isser Hana is you, so then maybe you do have bias over that. What exactly? Sorry? Maybe not. Take a look over there, you see how he's methodical about that. So what exactly the Nafkamina would be? A very complicated topol. So take a look there. It's basically Isser Chelek Aleph Klal Kuf Lamed Ches. Take a look, you'll see what he says. But just reverse the angle. Beis HaOtzer. So there's two more categories I want to try to cover. So first of all, the two major categories of marriage and divorce. Let's try to quickly look at those topics, and then we'll call it for tonight. So first of all, so what about marriage? So the Mishnah in Kedushin and Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis lists off a whole slew of Yisuri Hanah, and says that these items you can't be Mekadesh and Isha with. And the presumption is that because they're Yisuri Hana, it's basically not possible. So what exactly does that suggest? The Ritva says because you didn't give her any money. You didn't give her any value. Now how does that stem with the Ritva we mentioned before, that an Esra is called Lachem? So again, one possibly may distinguish that maybe something could maintain title as far as the original owner is concerned, be called Lachem, but still to have any shavius, to have any worth that it could be sold in the shuk for anything, especially not allowed to sell it, so it may break down at that level. The Avni Miluim has a slightly different spin on it, and he points to a Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, in Hei Chav Dalet, where the Rambam says that if you marry a woman with Matan Omanas Lahachzir, it doesn't work, because she does, in the end of the day, she can't benefit from this. She's got to give it back to you, so she doesn't have any benefit reaching her. So too, Avni Miluim says, so if it's Asur Bahana, she can't use it, it's the same story, she's not going to have any benefit. Sorry? It may be the same thing. It's possibly different because the Ritva uses the word mammon, meaning that it's not money. And here it focuses on whether it's money or not. If she can't use it, and it's not going to help. So it could be we're going to call it money, but still not effective fusion since she's not getting any hana out of it. There is a tosfos on that sugya, which may be very significant. We'll talk about it so much. Look at that tosfos over there in that sugya. So that Tosfos seems to say some interesting things. Tosfos asks, well, why don't we say that since it's possible to be for her to be nene from these items, shelo kederach hanason, so therefore she's mekudeshes for that reason, because there's value from that. So Tosfos gives two answers. One answer is that maybe if the item is such that the value that you'll get, shelo kederach hanason, isn't shavah pruta, that the item itself is Shavu Pruta if you're able to use it fully. But since you can't use it fully and you can only use the Shulah Kedarach HaNasa, that value is not Shavu Pruta. So that's already Mechodesh, because that's apparently suggesting that if these items do have a Shavu Pruta's worth of value, Shulah Kedarach HaNasa, that you would be Mekudeshes. And the second answer is perhaps even more striking. The second answer Tosfos gives is that, well, maybe what's going on is that she doesn't realize that she can't use it for its full purpose. So she agrees to get married, assuming it's worth X, and she doesn't know that because of Asur B'Hana, it's only worth a fraction of X. So that seems to suggest that if she did know exactly what she was getting into, that she would have the right to agree to get married for that, and that's a questionable conclusion, but it's an interesting implication that this Tosfos seems to be giving us. The Mishnah Malach over there has a suffix. What would the story be if the woman is a chola? And she's a chola, so she's a chola who's in danger, so she's allowed to use Yisuri Hana. So should we say for such a woman, Kiddushin with Yisuri Hana should work? So Suffolk Mishnah Melech has. This is basically boiled down to this question you mentioned earlier. What would the issue be? Is the issue that you can't use it? Or is the issue that somehow it's nullified in any monetary sense? If it's nullified in a monetary sense, so it's not going to matter. But if it's a question of her not being able to use it, so here the Maisa, she can use it, so then maybe that should be a different story. The Marit Al-Ghazi, in his commentary to Bukhoris, he thinks that anyway it's not going to work, because the Maisa still, she can use it herself, but it's still not worth money to her. Again, focusing on that element, she can't sell it to anybody else, she can't get any benefit from it that way, so it's just not going to work for that reason. It might work if he were to say to her, marry me on the hana that you get from being able to use this for your own purposes, so then he could marry her with a hana. But if you choose, which the Gemara discusses as an option in general, that you can use an ephemeral type of a hana as kedushin. But if you're saying use this item for the kedushin, so Marit Al-Ghazi thinks it's pretty straightforward that even for a cholonis, it's not gonna be effective. Yes, that's something to wonder about also. If you're going to say that in theory that it could work for an Isha Chola, so why don't we say then for any Isha? Because let's say she might think, I want to have this because maybe someday I'll be sick and then it'll be mutter. So then that seems to open up a Pandora's box, but if you want to be Mako that way, you could go even further with it, which seems to be open grounds for discussion. So what about the flip side? So what about divorce? So the Gemara says in Gittin and Daf Chaf Mar Aleph, that a get that's written on Yisuri Hana is kosher. Happens to be the Yerushalmi seems to say not that way. And the Rashba writes in his Shuvas that it's Mechlokas, the Bavli and Yerushalmi on this point. And Poskim seem to assume like the Bavli that the get on Yisuri Hana is kosher. It's what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Gerushin, it's what the Tur writes. And the Bach explains that even though it's Asur to get Hana from Yisuri Hana, hence the name, that's only when your intention is to be nana. But here your intention is not to be nana. Your intention is to write a get, and therefore it's mutter. However, others understand, like the Pri Chodesh discusses, and sounds like some Rishonim like this, that the Gemara never meant that it's mutter. The Gemara only meant to say that the get is kosher, but it could be that it's still asur. And the Harayi, there's also a case there that the Gemara, we actually made reference to a few weeks ago, when talking about Mach and Shrichel Gufa. The Gemara actually makes reference there to writing a get on an Eved. And that would seem to be a violation of the Yisr Torah, Yisr Torah of writing a tattoo. And nonetheless, the get is still kosher, even though that's not mutter to do. So at the Rai's, Gemara is not necessarily talking about things as mutter to do, it's just talking about a kosher get. So that's how some assume that the Gemara never meant to say it's mutter, just that it's kosher. The Chidushi Harim, in his Chidushim, so he thought that maybe the Gvar was that those who say it's mutter to use, so this is based on a Gemara in the Chulin. The Gemara says in the Chulin that if somebody uses a knife of Rezara to shecht, so that's mutter because actually he's actually being mekalkel, because the animal, even though he wants to shecht the animal so he can eat it, and that seems like it's hana, but the fact is the animal is now worth less than it was before. If it was alive, you could sell it for more. So that, even though it's a hana, that's a mekalkel, which on a monetary level may set it aside in the other direction. So too here, even though the guy wants to get divorced, but that could be viewed as a chob, so to speak, so maybe that's why there are those who are mekel, say it might be mutter to actually do the slachachila, to actually write to get on Isurei Hana. But there are other issues that seem to be relevant here, which bring us back to our central discussion. And this is what prompts the very famous comment of the Ktos, if you ever get involved in Gittin. This is very important to know about. The Ktos writes in Siman Reish that what about the issue of Zechir? Right? What about the fact that you have to give the get to the woman and it's not possible for her to be koned, apparently assuming that way. So there he comes up with the Yesod, which is again a very big discussion in Hilchos Gittin. And the Ktos writes that there is no din that you have to be makne the get to the woman. That is a din of giving the get to the woman. But this is not a din in Hilchos Kinyanim. This is just a physical act of giving, of putting it in some way that you fulfill the requirement of Nesina. But it's not bound to the rules of Kinyanim, which has many, many nafkaminas. This is a huge discussion. So the fact that there may be some type of impediment to Zechir in this situation, to affecting a Kinyan, is not necessarily an impediment to giving a get. That's and again, it's a little bit of a tangent, but that's something that's a very popular discussion in the area of Gittin. There's another angle you could ask from also, that the other Achronim also pick up on, that, okay, so maybe she doesn't have to buy it, she doesn't have to acquire it, so to speak, but doesn't it have to be the property of the man first? Doesn't the get have to belong to the man? So if the get itself is also Bahana, and the Gemara says you can't write on something that's Hefker, so how can the husband operate from that angle? So Shterm, that's a question that some Achronim raise and have a little bit of a hard time with. The Modim of Mine and Rav Sternbuch suggests that maybe it's not the paper that creates the Gerushin, it's really the letters. And the letters have to be on paper, and that's also important. But the fact is, the letters don't have the Yisra Hana attached to it, and therefore he owns the letters, and he transfers the letters over to the woman, that's enough. And he goes through all the different kashas you might ask on this, and he modifies each point, and basically say that's how he assumes it operates. Okay, there's much, much more to say about this. It's a huge topic. It's a very broad overview, but I'm not going to go all night. Just to quickly chazer over the points we did touch on. So we mentioned that within the many Yisurim in the Torah that are classified as Yisuri Hana, so first of all, it's a question, how do we define the Shir of Hana as far as Onshin? Is it a Kedayis? How much do we relate the Yisur Hana to some had Yisur Achila? Or is it a Shavapruta? And then we discussed also the question, wherever the Shir is there an Yisur of Chati Shir? And then we transfer it to the more central question that the Sfarim talk about whether or not it's any monetary ownership over Yisur Hana is possible. And we mentioned positions of many Rishonim that, yes, there is full bialos of Yisur Hana. We mentioned the Raya from the Gemara and Avodah Zarah about acquiring the Avodah Zarah of a Nachri. We mentioned the issue of acquiring Chametz on Pesach, the position of the Rambam and other Rishonim, and the Rivash, that's possible. And we mentioned the Ritva, this implication that it's possible to have Lachem, even by something that's Asur Bahana. A couple of other positions of Rishonim have to be defined a little bit. The Ran, Sternberg suggested that the Ran feels that there is ownership, but there is no ability to transfer property. There's a Bailim, but there's no Kinyonim. We discussed the position of the Kol Aryeh. This whole discussion is based on whether we say Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Meguf Dami. And we discussed the Rav Shimon Shkup and the Rav Chaim, whether the issue is that you just have no utility and therefore value is defined by utility. Or is it something inherent in Yisur Hana that they are mufka from any type of status of mominus? And then I mentioned some of the in-between positions. For example, the Ksos is, there is Bailim, but it's Einam Bereshuso. We discussed whether the Chasm Sofer are saying the same thing or not, and whether or not there's a difference, and what exactly is the range of this. And we mentioned the Rashba's position that din anyway is limited to Kachim and is not transferable to other issues of Kinyanim. And that's a question whether or not that's true lahalacha. And then we discussed a little bit the Ran's comments from the Rashba about somebody who asers his payers on himself. So does he become basically Hefker, or does he still have the right to say who can take it and who can't take it? And what does that say about his monetary title to it? And we discussed about the Machna Ephraim and the Mesivis about that. And we discussed about how Tosus and Croesus seems to apparently say that Yisur Hana have a status like Hefker. And then the other Rishonim would say that this Pashut is not called Shiloh, and that's into the position of Rashi in a few places, and the Raiv of the Ritva quotes going back to the issue of Esrog. And then we mentioned some distinctions that are found in Svarim, that maybe those that are, those Yisurei Hana that are Nisrafim, there is some ownership, but those that are Nikbarim, there aren't. And that the Nachal Eisen discussion of that, if maybe if something is possible to use for a mitzvah, that itself could create the possibility of mominus. Discuss the Shur HaShai, he says it depends on what you're actually doing, are you Minena from it or not. And the Marcheshes, who distinguishes between those Yisurei Hana that are Mutter Shloki Derech Hanasan and those that aren't. And our Shag suggestion that maybe Lakula there is no ownership, but Lachamla there is. The Yamshel Shomo's suggestion that those in Surim that are from Knas don't have, do have ownership, but others don't. And then we discussed a little bit, just mentioned the issue of Yisrael Hanamad Rabbanan. How does that factor in? By the way, when it comes to the Mekadosh Nisha, so the Rambam writes that Yisrael Hanamad Rabbanan don't work either, and then that's a whole discussion. That's the Kalim, we can take a look at that over there. So on that point of the Mekadosh Nisha, so the Mishnah says that it's not possible to Mekadosh Nisha with a whole slew of items, all of which seem to have a common element of being Yisrael Hana. And the Ritva says, because you're not giving her money. The Avni Miluim says, slightly different spin, because she's not getting any benefits, similar to Matana Manas Lahachzir. And the Tosus over there seems to take us down some surprising possibilities, because Tosus asks, why don't we say that it's worth something, because she can use the Shluki Derech Hanasa, and so you suggest that maybe because maybe it's only talking about a situation where that's not going to be by itself Shavu Pruta, or even more strikingly, maybe it's just the fact that she isn't being so mechdas to get that type of money, but maybe if she were, then the implication might be that maybe that is possible. And then we discussed Mishnah Melech's topic about an Isha who's a Chola, so can you give her a condition that is Aser Bahana or not, and the Ma'arik Bagaz is taking a position that for sure you can't, because at the end of the day, even if she's benefited from it, still, there's no monetary value for her, and at best, you can mekadesh her on the hanah she gets from using it, but not from the item itself. And then we discussed the flip side about divorce, the fact that the Gemara says that you can write a get on Yisurei Hanah, and then the question in postman, does that mean it's mutter, or just it's possible, and the get would be kasher. And speaking of mutter, we mentioned earlier the question of whether Mitzvah Lav Lahenis Nidnu, whether it means in general that all mitzvahs that are done in actions in pursuit of a mitzvah, Yisurei Hana are not relevant, or just that the aspect of the mitzvah itself is not Hana, so that's an issue here as well. And then the question becomes, okay, whether it's mutter or not, but how is it possible to use a mitzvah Hana for a get? What about the issues of Zechiyah that we've been talking about all this time, the issues of acquiring property, so what about the fact that the woman will not be able to acquire it monetarily? And to that, the Ksos gives his chiddush that a get doesn't need monetary kinyanim, it only needs nesina, and that's separate from kinyanim. But then the question might still be, what about his role? Doesn't he need to own the paper? And hefker is no good. So I mentioned Rav Sternbach's suggestion that maybe it's just the letters that affect the geirush and not the paper, and the letters themselves are not also b'hana, and that's okay. Okay, we will stop here. Bez Hashem next week, for the Shabbos week, we'll take a little bit of a look at topics of Psik Reisha.